Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
What's going on, guys? Matty here. Welcome into today's episode of Millionaire Mindcast. I've got a great guest for you guys. He is the president of Blue Loom, which is a gold and silver mining company. This is somebody that has been a part of many successful exits in terms of building great companies and ultimately packaging them up for purchase. And that is none other than my man, Rana Vig. He is based out of Canada, but has his hands in all kinds of things across really the globe and in the U.S., and I love getting the diverse insights that people who have such vast experience in many different industries, in this one particularly, many financial and wealth building pillars like precious gold, silvers, metals, you have cannabis, you've got other businesses, a lot of the different wealth building vehicles that we as wealth builders want to explore and look at and know more about and have insights into in order to determine what that might look like for us and our wealth building journey. So as you know, on these Millionaire Mindcast episodes on Monday's guests, we want to learn from their journeys. We want to pick their brain. We want to know the insights and the wisdom, the wins, the losses that they've experienced. So that way, based on what your goals are, what you're looking to achieve in your business or in your investment portfolio, that you can take and pull the insights out of their journey and apply them to where you're at and what you're looking to achieve. So that way you don't have to experience maybe some of the pains that they've experienced, or you can double down on the wins that have worked extremely well for them. So with that being said, you guys are going to really enjoy today's episode. If you're new to the podcast, I invite you to subscribe. We cover all things mindset, money, motivation to help you on your wealth building journey to really unlock that rich and fulfilling life. Knowing that wealth building, knowing that being rich looks different to everyone. We all have a different vision and a little bit different of a definition of what that means. Whether that is a certain amount of money in your bank account, that's a certain number next to your name in terms of net worth, that's a certain amount of passive income and mailbox money coming in that creates that freedom for you. It might be impact. It might be something that ties into your passions, right? All of those things really are different recipes for different people. And so we want to invite the conversations and create the space for you to get clarity on what that looks like for yourself. That way you can go about creating it and bringing it to life. So I'm excited for this conversation with Rana. Great guy, very interesting story, a lot of wisdom and gems packed into this episode. Know that everything that we talk about in the show is always going to be at millionairemindcast.com in each person's episode. You can go into the show notes, get all the links, all the resources, anything that we talk about summarized and available in there. Don't forget to check out therichlifestore.com for all my goal setters, all my purposeful planners. Got lots of cool resources, freebies, downloads for you guys there. For my high net worth accredited investors that want to know more about the syndication and investment opportunities with me, you can always text the word deals to 844-447-1555. If you're a new real estate investor, you want my free real estate investing course because you want to capitalize on the amazing opportunities in terms of building wealth through real estate. You can get my free course by texting the word invest to that same number, 844-447-1555. If you're not taking advantage of life insurance yet and the infinite banking concept, head over to becomethebank.info. And with that being said, I don't want to waste any more time. Let's dig into today's episode with my man, Rana Vig, right after this quick message from today's show sponsor.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process. And in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales.
These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Well, I'm excited to welcome into the show today, Mr. Rana Vig. How are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Both West Coasters. You're in the Great North up in Canada. I'm down here in California. What have you been working on recently that you're getting fired up about heading into 2021?
Oh, my latest project, certainly from a business perspective, is very exciting. Launched about 2 years ago, a company called Blue Lagoon Resources, which is in the mining sector. Most of my life I was in private industry, but about 10 years ago, I got involved in the capital markets and frankly got my rear end handed to me because the whole industry collapsed. So it's been a long time coming. And now with gold and silver, making a move, governments in the U.S. leading the way with printing trillions of dollars,
yep,
and devaluing, creating a huge devaluation of currency. Gold and silver is really looking good. It's expected to be the start of the precious metal super cycle. So I'm very excited to be involved at this time in that sector and build this mining company.
Well, I definitely want to circle up on kind of this precious metal super cycle and getting, our listener a little bit more information on what you as an industry expert are seeing, especially in that asset class being something that is very stable and long-term sustainable for growth from an investment perspective. I want people to get a better understanding of, who Rana is and where you got your start. And obviously you said something that I think many entrepreneurs can relate to, right? Of that journey of some obviously great wins, but also some, I like to call them majestic failures. But where did your entrepreneurial and business journey and career start?
Started when I was just out of school, really. I was not very studious, much to the disheartening of my parents, who wanted me to be an engineer or a doctor or an accountant or a lawyer or something. And I wanted no part of that. So I exited my first opportunity, which was when I was, about 22 or so. My father, who was an engineer, got together with a couple other guys and decided to get into his own business because he got laid off for the first time in his life back in those days. And that was a shock to his system. So he got involved in business. And of course, having not much experience in business, they immediately got into trouble. And I was quite the go-getter. So I saw my opportunity and I said, hey, I think I can come in here and help you in sales. It was actually a product out of California. It was a big juicing machine out of the Los Angeles area, which at the time was very unique. It's this big, huge machine that you used to put these oranges into the machine. And it was very visual. It would come up this little conveyor belt and squeeze the juice. And this is the time when fresh juices were just starting to become in favor. So I took that opportunity, got involved in their business and to some extent helped them. And then I never looked back after that. Helped launch five different enterprises and private business, all in different verticals. And it's been quite the ride.
What has been your favorite vertical? Obviously, entrepreneurs, right? It's, you try a lot of different things. You get beat up, life and business kind of takes your backpack and steals your lunch money. And then at some point in time, you find kind of a groove. You get, weaponized through getting your butt kicked, a few times. And then you find this confidence, right? That you kind of overcome a lot of challenges and hurdles. And at some point in time, you kind of plant your flag somewhere. When did you know, or when did you feel like it was time to plant your flag in, you know, what arena, and how did you, you know, handle kind of some of those adversities and the mental challenges that most people stop at, and don't push beyond?
Well, there's a number of questions you're asking there. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if I've ever planted the flag. I mean, you know, because I'm a kind of a startup guy, right? So what I really like to do is put a project together, get it going, and then move on. And, you know, that normally takes 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you know, typically to do something like that. I'm not a very good person I don't see myself sitting somewhere, you know, 25 years later, you know, building something. That's just not, you know, sort of my forte. And a lot of people look at me and say, well, how can you do this? How can you jump from, you know, one business, like I just mentioned, you know, sort of the fresh juicing, you know, environment to, you know, a publishing company that I own, to the mining company, to the cannabis industry that I was involved with. You know, how can you think like that? I don't know. I just, it just kind of comes naturally to me. I'm more of a generalist. And I think that the strength that I think that I have is that I very early on, I recognize that, you know, I'm not that smart, you know? So what I want to be is the dumbest guy in the room. So what I do is every industry that I get involved with, I just surround myself with the biggest and the brightest of that industry. And that way, you know, they can always, you know, often very, very highly educated people. And I mean this with no disrespect to any of them, but they often become very, very single focused, narrow focused in that field. Me being a generalist, you know, can come at it from a much larger, much higher viewpoint and help execute on a vision that they often can't. So I've just I've been very fortunate, had the ability to jump from sector to sector, not prematurely, like, you know, build something, you know, sell it off or move on, and then come into the next sector. And adversity, I mean, you know, every sector has its own challenges. You know, I think what the point is that you have to have a certain mindset, a certain type of thinking that you're going to, you know that at some point you're going to be, you're going to, you know, face a hurdle. And you just have to have that mindset to be able to, you know, the old saying goes, right? You know, you go around it, you jump over it, you go underneath it, whatever it takes. That's what entrepreneurship is all about. And I think that I've thankfully been able to, I think I can say master that over these years by getting my butt kicked a lot.
Right. And, you know, when you run into those kind of physical or mental hurdles, what have been some of the things that have helped you, you know, really push through or around or below, right? Getting through those challenges? Because I know that a lot of people, whether it's in business or in personal life, they face these, you know, mental adversities, right? That may be physical, may just be, you know, in their head and or in their mindset. You know, how have you been able to, what is the narrative? What is the conversation when you find yourself kind of pushing up against those ceilings? How do you process and work through and kind of problem solve beyond those challenges?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think mentorship is very important. Every industry I've been involved with, you know, I've always had found some leader, some mentor that I could bounce ideas off of, you know, find some inspiration, you know, from being grounded. You know, I think it was very, very important not taking myself too seriously, recognizing that failure is part of the process. And you know, it's easy to talk about now, but when you're in it, right? I mean, you are literally on your knees and looking around to see if anybody's watching you crying. I mean, you know, it is. And that's the fact. I mean, and then you have to have find that deep inspiration. A long time ago, I learned, you know, the Navy SEALs have a training a system and a mindset that when they think that they have nothing left in them, you know, physically or mentally, they're still 20%. They're still 20% that they have, and they're taught to push through to that 20%. And when all seems hopeless, you know, that's what you have to go back to and think, you know, and come back and reflect and think that, hey, you know, it's not going to be over. There is a way, and you push through that. And again, as I said, it sounds very easy now, but of course, when you're in it, it does become challenging. And I think to some extent, it does become easier the more adversity, you know, you kind of face. I think it does become easier because you look at it and say, okay, this is another issue, a problem or a hurdle that I'm facing. How did I deal with it before? How do I, you know, deal with it now? And I think one of the keys is, it might surprise you, but, you know, a long time ago, I learned that people don't actually think, and what I mean by that is, you know, we go through our day just bouncing off, all these thoughts, right? Just random, you know, they're just going everywhere. But how many people actually sit down, you know, let's say in their favorite chair every day, you know, or their favorite spot for 30 minutes, take a pen and a pad and a pencil and review the plan, review the day, review the week, the month, the year, what's happening? So rather than just sitting around worrying about what's happening, you know, at some point you got to sit down and say, okay, I'm faced with this challenge. I'm faced with this hurdle. What are my options? And you know what? I was shocked and surprised to find how few people actually do that. Yeah. And I think it's one of the key skills, you know, that I've learned from mentorship, you know, over the years that has helped me push through, you know, many of the adversities that I faced in my life.
I love that. You know, there's definitely the power of the pause, right? And creating, I call it my bunker. My bunker is a space that ultimately I always know I can go to retreat to a safe space without any distractions and kind of give myself through certain frameworks or, you know, processes that I like to plug into to come to some desired outcome that's productive and yes, helpful, moving me forward. And so I love that you brought that up because that is also a great way to keep me grounded and keep me aligned with what I should be saying yes to, what I should be saying no to, right? And I'm curious in terms of routines and rhythms, you seem like a very process-oriented guy, but you also keep it very simple, right? What have been some of the great routines and rhythms that have served you really well over the years, maybe in personal and or in business?
Yeah, I mean, great question. I think that's very important and that helps you, you know, be grounded, right? Physically, I think you better be, fit. To, you know, so that means, you know, we're not sitting around drinking half the night and hoping to get up with a clear mind. I mean, that's not going to work. Obviously, you know, we all have our vices and I certainly do mine. Love your California Napa and
wine,
right? So, you know, you can't work all day and not have any fun, but it can't be, you know, obviously done all the time. So routines has always been is to make sure that I'm up early and, you know, get some form of physical exercise and mental as well as, for my body. Mental meaning that, you know, the opposite of what I just said earlier about sitting down for 30 minutes and analyzing, you know, what's happening and really thinking about what you're doing, it's taking 10 minutes to pause and quieten your mind. Right. So that's the complete opposite, right? Trying to figure out, man, is that is one of the hardest things that I've ever done and just can't, you know, I'm still not anywhere close to where I need to be because it's amazing how your brain just fires off these random thoughts. Try it. I don't know if you do that, but try to hold it for 30 seconds, a single thought. It's just so challenging. So that's a very great way to kind of start and then move into some sort of a physical exercise, be it aerobic or be it, muscle, is strengthening just to get the day started and kick it off. And that's been something that I've been doing, you know, for many, many years. And then just, have a constant conscious plan of not constantly being interrupted, you know, be it social media or be it emails. It's just amazing how many people believe that you can multitask. You cannot multitask. Laser beam focus is what equates success, right? And if you're trying to do all these various things, you know, and now it's particularly in the last few years, it's gone so bad with social media and with with the constant barrage of emails and interruptions, you just can't focus. It's just, you know, so you end up wasting a lot of time. So just have these, you know, sort of little key little things, and probably the other thing that's really kept me on track is not falling to this trap of having a to-do list. A lot of people think that you got to have a to-do list. Here's the 10 things that I'm going to do today. And you start checking it off. You know, it doesn't really work. The only thing that works is scheduling your time for a specific period in a day that you're going to accomplish a task. So if, you know, task from 1 to 10, it better be in the calendar that at this time from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, I'm working on this. Right. And it actually gets done. Otherwise, you know, you're looking at this to-do list all day and the to-do list jumps to the next day and the next day, right. You know, a whole bunch of things aren't yet accomplished. Right. So
Absolutely. And you mentioned just the really key thing, I think, for many entrepreneurs or many visionaries or, right, the generalists who have big goals or focusing on a lot of different things, a lot of different plates spinning is, you know, distraction and really eliminating distraction. Being that, you know, they say distraction is the enemy of success, right? Or you said eliminating distraction equates to success. What have been some of the distractions or maybe habits in your life that you've had to eliminate that you think or see a lot of people holding on to that if they were to just let go or to maybe bring some more awareness to it could serve them in getting where they want to go, maybe a little bit more faster, maybe a little bit more effectively?
Oh, you know, probably my greatest distraction is, you know, I'm a constant entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, right? So I'm always looking at ideas. I get so many things thrown at me all the time, every week, all sorts of projects. And to really stay focused is a real challenge because, you know, you look at some things, you go, wow, this is an incredible idea. I could add so much value to this and take this, you know, forward is very challenging for someone like myself, right? So to be able to stay focused on that, I think is very, very important. In fact, just before this interview, I was talking to my son who was sharing a great idea with me. And that's exactly what I said to him. I said, son, I don't have the bandwidth. Don't even talk to me about it. I've got to stay focused and build this mining company. And because I think it's a great opportunity. And so, you know, so I think distractions are probably one of the key things, you know, for me. To stay focused and to make sure that I'm accomplishing, you know, what I've set out to accomplish.
Do you have somewhat of a kind of a decision matrix that helps you identify whether or not you say yes or no to things, right? One of my early mentors, he told me, he said, when you're a talented individual, you're always going to have people fighting for your time or fighting for your investment money or fighting for your talent, right? They always want to look at, you know, look, let's just say for Rana, you know, you're the horse that everybody likes to bet on and want to attach their carriage to. How do you decide who you allow to kind of link up to you or how you decide who to give your time or to your money to?
It is another very challenging thing for me. You know what? It took me a long time to say no. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's joining boards, you know, for charities or just, you know, or looking at different projects. It honestly, that was one of the hardest things for me to say because, you know, I think, like I said, I think I'm a pretty humble, pretty down to earth guy. And I just felt it was rude. But, you know, I just have started to find that I just cannot handle. And so I just have to very respectfully and politely tell people, you know, that this is not, you know, part of my plan right now. And, you know, great idea and good luck to you. But and if I can, I'll help by, you know, pointing to some other, you know, someone else or something if I can. But that's been a very challenging. But in terms of a matrix, as I'm looking at projects, they've definitely got to tick a couple of boxes, you know, for me, very important. And I think one of the first ones for me is that they've got to be past the proof of concept. You know, mm-hmm. I learned a long time ago that, I want to be leading edge, but I don't want to be bleeding edge, right? You know, let somebody else's concept be the, you know, and I all, you know, all the power to them. And, you know, they've got to be the people who are, you know, at the front lines and really developing their, you know, whatever they believe in the beginning. But I want to come at the, you know, the tail end. You know, case in point, this project that I've got currently right now, you know, these owners, the predecessor who owned this gold mine, they spent $28 million over the last 12 years developing this, all in development infrastructure. You know, it takes about 20 years to get the permit to actually mine. And these guys, you know, and the average here in British Columbia is 14. So they spent 12 years developing it, $28 million, and they got it to the 1 yard line. So they were the ones, you know, at the bleeding edge, if you like, right?
Yep, yep.
I came in 9 months ago, you know, they ran out of time. They're 83 years old now, right? So I came in at the end and they'd heard about some of my accomplishments in the other industries. And I made a deal with them and I'm, you know, literally at the 1 yard line to take this across. And soon will be an actual gold producer. Not many companies, you know, can say that. Less than 5% of the companies on the Toronto Stock Exchange actually can say they're actual have cash flow and it'll be a gold producer. So they did all the heavy lifting, right? And not that I don't have to do the heavy lifting, but you know, it's a different way to do the heavy lifting. So you know, so all the projects that I look at, I try to look at that to see, you know, the cannabis industry was similar. You know, in 2018, you know, I focused zeroed in on the cannabis industry. Because it was a huge trend, and I thought, man, I would be crazy not to jump on, you know, on that trend. and I saw Canada was way overvalued. The US was still, you know, getting going. And I was very fortunate. I found a company called Curaleaf out of the Boston area, and I took them public. That was the largest Canadian cannabis raise in history, $520 million raised, nearly a $6 billion reverse takeover. And a couple months later, I was able to do it again. And I found a company out of Harvest, out of Arizona called Harvest Health and Recreation, which was the third largest in 2018, a $300 million raise and a $2 billion reverse takeover. But guess what? They had already built the infrastructure of those companies. They already had licenses. They already had, you know, retail operations. But there was a lot of runway yet to, you know, to open up more, et cetera. And they needed to go public. They couldn't go to public in the United States because of all the laws, you know, the federal laws. So enter, you know, someone like myself and take them public over here. So I think that that it's very important for me to make sure, and that's not for everybody. You know, some people have, you want to be there in the beginning. And I did that in the beginning myself as well. You know, you get so wrapped up sometimes in an idea and you go, wow, this is so incredible. You know, once it gets into commercial production, you know, this is going to be amazing. But that getting to that commercial production or getting from a lab, you know, a scale test to full commercialization is a big process. I'd rather let that be somebody else's headache, and I'll come and help execute and put the final touches on the on the deal.
I love that. The key takeaway there, right, is that you have a very specific criteria in terms of your buy box, or let's just say, in, you know, a company that you want to get involved with. Invest your time, your resources, your team into. And if it doesn't meet those parameters, right, it's much easier for you to either give a graceful no and decline, or see some alignment there and obviously some value that you can bring and kind of take it to that next step. I think that's really important because a lot of people don't necessarily know when they should be saying yes or no. I call it a dirty yes. They just say yes to it because maybe they feel like they have to, versus maybe a clean no. Or really a clean yes determined based on having clear criteria. And that obviously comes through time and experience, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it's the fear of missing out, right?
Yeah.
People feel that, oh my God, you know, this could be a great opportunity. You know, I can't miss out on this, but you can only do so much and there's only so much bandwidth. And that's, you know, it becomes very important to be focused on what you're doing. And, you know, yeah. And then at the same time, you know, the probably one of the hardest things is if you're in so vested in a project and, you know, when do you cut your ties? When do you say, well, this is not going to work? Very tough point in your life. And I've been there, you know, a couple of times. And
what do you say to that? How do people determine whether or not it's time to kind of pull the ripcord?
Yeah, because, you know, there is a point where you say, okay, you know, I've got to persist. You know, you say, you know, right. Hey, I read that in a book, or that guy said 20%, you know, Navy SEALs, you know, I'm not at that 20% yet. But there is that, there is the, you know, everyone has an inner voice. And that's another skill that, you know, that you over time, you know, need to develop. And the sharper you can become on that, the more successful, I believe, you know, a person, an individual becomes. And it took me a long time to listen to my inner voice. You know, there's, and again, it takes, patience and analysis and going, well, I my inner voice said that, and that's what I did. And boy, that didn't work out so well. So, you know, you got to analyze and you start to refine and hone in that skill, which has served me well, you know, certainly in the last decade or anyways.
Yeah. I've heard, I forget what book I was reading. It was a recent book. And one thing was not just to listen to your inner voice, because a lot of people don't necessarily have the best conversations with their inner voice, but to also command to yourself through your inner voice what it needs to hear, right? So a lot of people beat themselves up, or they have negative self-talk. They really, they just destroy themselves innerly. Oh. And you can find, like you said, the key word there that, you know, I'm pulling out of that is awareness, right? Of, can't always control that first thought that enters your head, but you can control the next thought, right? You can't control how you respond to what you just told yourself. Ah, no, that's not me. I am this, or I am, right? Affirming powerful things that are really positive and productive instead of the negative spiral that so many people go down. So I think it's really important that you talked about kind of this awareness around your self-talk and how that is or isn't serving you.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. 100%. You know, the greatest enemy is within, right? The person who holds you back is the one in the mirror. I mean, that becomes that's powerful. And you know, these are skills that I developed very early on. You know, when I was listening to positive, you know, sort of tapes, back in the day, or you know, reading, you know, positive self-development books, because it's very important. You know, you alluded to that earlier. I mean, look, I came from a private sector, and I went into mining, and mining collapsed, so I didn't do so well there. But then cannabis came along, and I ended up taking two of the largest companies public, and from there people followed me into the mining sector. I mean, look at the diversity there. So what I'm getting at is, you mentioned earlier, you know, bet on the jockey, not the horse, right? So if I'm the jockey, I better work on myself. I better develop, better improve myself, right? Whether it's through books, knowledge, and today's, listen, I tell my kids all the time, man, you guys have the most incredible, you know, information opportunity at your fingertips, right? The biggest library in the world. It's called Google. Yeah. My goodness. We never had that, right?
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
I mean, I'm from the day. Maybe even predates you, right? When we had Encyclopedia Britannica, people would say, "What the hell is that?" Right,
right,
right. People used to go door to door for 99 cents. We could buy, you know, we would buy a one edition, right? We'd buy A for 99 cents, and then you go to B. My God, I'm dating myself. It was so long ago, but today, you know, with Google and with YouTube, and I mean, is there any question that can't be answered? Right? I mean, it's very powerful. So. To be able to train your mind, to be able to because we are surrounded by negativity. I mean, look at the world that we live in, right?
Yeah.
From the minute you're born, how many times people say to us, no, can't do that. Don't do that. No, right. So you're constantly trained for that, but yes, there's going to be adversity. There's going to be doubt. And you said it, you can't control that first thought, but you can certainly, if you're conscious and if you're aware,
right,
control the subsequent thoughts. And that is in many ways is the difference, right, between the people who succeed and the people who don't.
Well, definitely something that has consciously been on my mind lately has been the interesting growth and scale of gold and silver. You know, with everything that's gone on in 2020 and obviously a lot of printing going on, not only in the US, but worldwide. You know, what is your overall outlook, maybe just a high level in terms of the precious metals market? What are you most excited about? What are you paying attention to? And, you know, what do the, you know, average investors need to be thinking about, you know, heading into the future?
We are in the beginning of the precious metals super cycle. And, you know, the mining is very cyclical. And yep. As I said, when I got involved, I got involved at a time when it collapsed. It was at the downside. That was 10 years ago. And generally, every 10 years or so, you know, it changes. And we are here now. And with what's happening right now, this is exactly what the you know, gold and silver, especially gold, likes, is this environment. I mean, you've got an environment where the money is being, governments are broke all over the world. They're broke, right? And you've got money being printed at unprecedented scale and unprecedented levels. And that's what gold really, really likes. And then on top of that, I mean, you've got the pandemic worldwide, which is quite, and then you've got all these riots and demonstrations, chaos. So, I mean, it's like the perfect trifecta, you know, that's happening right now. And gold, and it's not even so much that gold is going up. It's that the dollar is going down. I mean, think about it, right? If we were back in the 70s right now, you know, gold was about $35 an ounce. And if you took that gold, you know, that 1 ounce, and we buried it in the backyard, and we, next to it, we took $35 and we put it in a plastic bag and we buried it next to it. And today, fast forward in 2021, we dug it back out. You know, what is the value of that piece of 1 ounce? Still the same ounce. Now that's worth around $1,800, $1,850 right now. What is the value of that $35? You know, couple of cups of coffee at Starbucks.
Yep.
Right. I mean, look at the disparity. So, you know, this is what people need to understand, that gold is an asset. It's a way to preserve your wealth. But you know, the challenge people often say is, well, how much can I buy? Right. I mean, it's a 1800, 1850, whatever it is right now.
Yeah.
So what I get excited about is the junior mining sector, because what happens is, as gold appreciates, you know, if it appreciates, let's say on a scale from 1 to 10, if it appreciates 1, the junior mining good companies with good management will accelerate at 10. So the jump, the leverage is incredible. And that's why, you know, what I'm very, very excited about right now, that and even at, you know, people get worried that, well, gold, you know, pulls back. But these are ebbs and flows of the market. It goes up, comes down. But every study that I'm reading, you know, from Bank of America to Goldman Sachs to, you know, some of the leading, you know, thinkers in this field, are all projecting that gold will be well over $2,000 this year, you know, somewhere between $2,300 and $2,500, which means that junior miners and gold companies, our stock is going to typically explode. And that's you can verify that by just looking at historically. This happened in, you know, 2008, 2009, when the last financial crisis happened. Gold initially pulled back, just like it did not too long ago, and then it rocketed to make a new high. And if you look at the junior miners, their stocks went up tenfold. I mean, it's just crazy. Very similar to what happened in the cannabis industry, right? I mean, it was, the valuations were just incredible. Mm-hmm. The stocks went from, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 cents to, you know, multiple dollars, because there's a wave, it's a tsunami of investors that comes in. And so I'm very, very excited to be at the beginning of that super cycle, which is, you know, I believe where we are right now. These are times that can generational wealth can be created.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something that, you know, everybody's interested in, right? Is, yeah, I want to create wealth for myself, but what does that look like for my kids and my grandkids and future generations, not only maybe in your own lineage, but people that you care about, your community? And how does how does everybody kind of get a slice of that wealth pie, knowing that we just know not everybody's pulling a chair up to the table. Not everybody cares about it. Not everybody has this kind of financial literacy and fitness in terms of why this is important to them. If you could, you know, give a prescription to each person on the planet in terms of how to approach maybe an investment ideology or a philosophy, something conservative, something safe, something that might tie into generational wealth around precious metals, what would you tell them?
Well, I think, you know, you have to analyze, first of all, your risk tolerance, and you have to take a look at, you know, where you are in your life. There is no get rich quick. You know, this is the challenge, right? Everybody wants to, you know, buy GameStop and you know, and hope it goes to, you know, whatever it went to, and make a new hit. And, you know, one of my kids was telling me the other day, oh, look at dad, look at this this person, they put, you know, this little bit of money into it, and you know, they got $3 million. Well, that's a fluke. Right. I mean, yeah. I don't think they woke up, 3 months ago thinking, boy, I'm going to put this in GameStop. This is what's going to happen. I mean, so those are just anomalies. That's just a fluke that, that happens. But investing isn't like that. Right. You've got to take a look and have a plan. Most people, you know, overestimate what they can do in the short term and underestimate in the long term. Right. This is really a little bit of a longer term play. So in my opinion, you know, first of all, you know, we spend way too much, the more than we make, right? I mean, it's a very simple philosophy, right?
Right.
You've got to spend less than you make, right? And you take a little bit of that money and you start putting it aside and you do whatever you can at the time. If you have the ability to buy, let's say, an ounce of gold, or maybe you can't do gold and you can do silver at, you know, in right now it's in the mid 20s and it's expected to go, you know, way higher. So, you know, you start to accumulate a little bit at a time. Maybe it's once a month or maybe it's once every quarter, or whatever you can afford, so that you can start to build up a little bit of a portfolio. I recommend, you know, everybody buy, you know, 5 or 10% of their net worth and have that in some sort of physical product. And then, you know, then there's the junior miners, like I was saying, like our company, Blue Lagoon Resources. And there's many others. I'm not trying to say, you know, ours, but there's many others. You know, those are the type of companies, if you have the risk tolerance, because remember, there is risk. Never invest anything that you can't afford to lose, because there's always risk. But, and of course, always get professional advice, right? But the point is that, you know, if you take a little bit of your sort of disposable income that you believe that can be, that you can segregate, and it's not going to, you know, necessarily affect your lifestyle, you know, today, then you find a good company with good management and good projects, and see what their track records are, and if they have been successful in the past building other companies, then the chances are they're also going to, you know, build this one, and you take a little slice of that, right? And you take a look at the markets, and you look at the dips, and you buy, and you accumulate slowly, and then the rest of it, you just have to. In many ways, hope that the jockey that you're betting on executes, right? I mean, really, that's what it all comes down to.
Absolutely. No, that makes a lot of sense. What do you say to the people that are, oh, well, you know, gold doesn't pay you, right? Or you have to store it. It's clunky. The process is challenging. What do you say to those people in terms of why this should be some part of their investment portfolio allocation?
Well, what I would say to them, and I mean this in no disrespect, is that they don't understand wealth management and building wealth, right? I mean, you know, gold does not pay you a dividend, or does not pay anything like that, but that's 100% true. But however, it is a preservation of wealth,
right?
Right. Those people who bought over the years, a little at a time, as I told you, little strategies at a time. Today are laughing, you know, all the way to the bank whenever they take it to the bank to cash out, because, you know, they bought it at way lower prices over time. They didn't just go out, you know, one day and say, I'm going to buy, 100 ounces, right? Just over time, they built that. So I would say that people don't understand. You know, if you look at mining companies, not even just the junior miners, the big ones, and you compare them. They have outgrown and outpaced some of the biggest investors like Warren Buffett. So it all depends on your time horizon and how you're analyzing. But I would strongly disagree. I think that gold is a preservation of wealth. You know, in India, for example, you know, North Americans aren't taught this. Like cultures like India, for example, they're taught from birth this concept.
Interesting.
And you could be the poorest person in India, and in a village, and I guarantee you that person owns, you know, a gram or two. Forget ounces, because that's all they can afford. Because it's ingrained in their head that this is a preservation of wealth, and you've got to have some of that. You know, in villages, will pool together, and this is what part of the reason why the dowry system, you know, came many years ago. And I'm not getting into a discussion about whether that's good or bad, because that's a whole different discussion. But from a financial aspect, the whole concept was that, that you give the young lady who's going to be married, you know, some gold, some jewelry in the form of jewelry, so that if in times of trouble, she can rely on that.
Yeah.
You know, so these are centuries old concepts that have been taught, you know, to these people. And that's not just India. I mean, you know, many European cultures and Middle Eastern cultures also, you know, believe in that. For some reason, North America, you know, we don't believe that. We just like the almighty dollar. We like the, you know,
it is,
all green.
Right. It is very interesting. And you wonder what it would look like for so many people if that was a foundational ideology or philosophy of, you know, instead of this consumerism mentality, if some of that was allocated to, hey, this is just what we do. You buy gold, right? As somewhat of a hedge for life's risks, right? And kind of what that could look like as it accumulates and compounds over decades of time. That's an interesting thought that you bring up there, Rana. In talking about this, you know, this almighty dollar, right? We're starting to see this boom around, you know, cryptocurrency and kind of the digital gold, right? What are your thoughts on cryptocurrency to gold to obviously, you know, the volatility of the dollar? And what are your thoughts on what that's going to look like maybe from a dollar perspective moving forward and how risky it could become?
Well, the dollar definitely, you know, is in trouble, right? Again, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, simple economics, math. You know, remember, there was a reason why this piece of paper, this green piece of paper called a dollar, had some value to it. You know, I mean, why is it worth $10 or $20 or what have you? Well, because there was gold back behind it, right? Yep. That was the whole concept that, look, gold was clunky, as you said, right? So were you going to, you know, take that to Starbucks and try to take a small piece of it? So, you know, obviously, you know, hundreds of years ago, you know, they came out with this concept that, you know, for this piece of gold, we can create something that's a little bit easier, you know, to circulate, which is obviously the paper money. But then when the world came off, when Nixon took everybody off the U.S. off the gold standard back in the early 70s, I mean, everything changed, right? Now they can just print as much as they want. So it's not backed in it. The only thing is backing it is because the government says, don't worry. You know, we assure you that when you take it to Starbucks, you will be able to buy that cup of coffee or buy that Big Mac when you go to McDonald's. So, I mean, that's the only reason that it's. But the more they print, the more the people are starting to realize that it's not really actually worth very much. So it's and again, simple examples. You know, my dad, when I was growing up, my dad's an engineer. He was making about $40,000 a year, and a house in that time in the 70s cost us about $40,000. Today, that same engineer makes about $85,000 a year. You know what the house costs? $1.5 million. Right. The same house at the same place. I mean, it's insane.
Talk about inflation.
Right? So it's all, but the government tells us that, you know, that there's not much inflation. We're actually trying to create inflation, they tell us. It's so absurd. It just doesn't make any sense. That's a whole different, you know, a whole different discussion.
So what are your concerns about where things are at moving forward? And, you know, what should people be thinking about in terms of just staying in front of these trends, right? It's can't necessarily control so many things out there, but we can keep our side of the table clean. We can keep our financial house in order. What are some of the things that people should be paying attention to and trying to, you know, at least stay connected and intimate with in order to stay ahead of some of these curves?
Well, trends, I think, are very important. You know, another thing I learned a long time ago, they say trend is your friend, right? Mm. You know, 10 years ago, junior mining, for example, was not the place to invest in because it was going nowhere. But today it is, right? Because as I mentioned, we're at the beginning of the precious metals super cycle. So cryptocurrency, same thing, right? I think, you know, I don't understand it enough, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just, but I know there's value. And it's the same concept, right? See, the reason gold has value, a tremendous value, is it's a finite amount of it, right? There's very little, less than 5% of the total supply is increased every year. So it's a very, very tight supply, and discoveries are becoming harder and harder to find and mine, right? So there's limited supply. Cryptocurrency, right? Bitcoin, based on the same concept, that there's a limited supply. Now, how it exactly all plays out, you know, much smarter people than me are looking at it. But, you know, would I encourage people to be involved? Yeah, I think if they have the tolerance, it's a bit too volatile for me, right? It went to, what was it, 19,000, then it went all the way back down to like three. Now it's all back up to 46.
Yeah.
Because Elon Musk tweeted it out, I think,
yesterday. Right, it's crazy. Before,
right, and then there's a whole bunch of other coins, right, that, you know, my son was telling me the other day, you know, this Dogecoin or something.
Uh-huh.
Gone up. So, but, you know, makes no sense to me. That's speculation.
Yeah.
That's not investment, right? That's just speculation because someone says something and boom, it pops up. And then soon after that, it's going to maybe come down.
Yep.
So, I think that my advice would be is to have people, you know, encourage them to, you know, do some research. And again, it's not that hard these days, right? On YouTube and Google and various channels that of information that you can get, and pick the sector that they're comfortable. If they're comfortable in the stock market, that's relatively easy. They should participate in there. If they're comfortable in cryptocurrency, whichever it is, but the point is, I think that I'm making is, this is not the time to be a spectator.
Yes.
Okay? Because if you're a spectator and you're just going to watch the world go by, and this is not that time. If you are ambitious and you want to, some things to change in your life, then you know what, you have to do something about it. And sitting around and licking your wounds and crying, unfortunately, I'm sorry if that sounds harsh, but that's not going to do it.
Right.
The cavalry is not coming. Right?
That's still what money, scared money doesn't make money, right?
That $1,400 check that, Biden is trying to, that's, what is that going to, how long is that going to last, and how what is that going to solve until the next $1,400 more they print?
Yep. Yep. And that's the scary thing, man. We're on a very slippery slope, but the people that, are leaning in and have two hands on the steering wheel and are fully engaged are going to be the ones that figure out how to navigate these challenging times. And Rana, I appreciate you and your time, brother, and your wisdom that you've shared with us, and everybody that wants to know more about you, your companies, where you're at, where's the best place for them to do that?
The best place is to just go to our current, my current company's website, BlueLagoonResources.com. There's an email link there. I'm happy to, I try my best to stay engaged with as many people as I can. They can learn more about our company there. We trade in the U.S. As well as in Canada. So if they feel so inclined, they can do some more research and reach out to me. Happy to have a discussion.
Brandon Vig, appreciate your time, brother. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you share it with somebody else who maybe needs to hear this today, or that could gain some value from something that was talked about or discussed in today's interview. You just never know, one piece of information, a conversation, a tool, a resource can completely transform and change the trajectory of someone's life or their business. So if you get any kind of value or you want to support the show, all we ask is that you help us organically get this in front of more people. Also, for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey and unlock more financial freedom, get more time back, and just level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, courses from our guests, all kinds of free content, downloads, checklists, upcoming event info, and how you can connect with us live in person, all kinds of great valuable tools. You can get that over at therichlifeacademy.com. Last but not least, I always want to know, who do you guys want to hear me interview next? Let me know. Shoot me a text at 844-447-1555. With that being said, until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friend.